Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Today here, more importantly, our very special guest and part of a series together, Diane Brisky, is the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction, is the name of the book, and just wonderful words about the environment, about the oceans, about endangered species, and a little bit of everything that comes along with there. One of the folks who's really dedicating her life to getting the message out, Diane Brisky, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, in an interview I did earlier, a gentleman was telling me about the golden lion tamarin. I don't know if you know what that is. It's a monkey-like mm-hmm. creature. And they're in Brazil, and they're really a beautiful creature, but they were almost...
Yeah, they are. They're very cute.
Yeah, they are very cute, but they were almost at the point of extinction because of poachers
yeah.
and people grabbing it as specimens and everything else. And what he said is that the zoos really stepped up and saved them. They grabbed them, and they procreated. They reproduced very well in zoos. Mm-hmm. And there was a huge success story, and they took a whole bunch of them, and they released them in the wild again to get it, and the population's okay. It's one of the things that zoos really have been excellent at, and I know you've been involved in zoos, and you've been a big proponent of them. It's not only for education, where people could see up close, relatively speaking, up close, what kind of animals are out there and what the world looks like outside of our own living rooms. But zoos do so much that we're not even aware of, or that you and I might be, but the average person's not aware. Yes and no, these zoos are really stepping up when it comes time to preserving endangered species.
Right, they are. A lot of people... there really are not that many zoos that have animals in cages. We have, and some of the animals, it's hard to put them in a natural habitat. If they're in an enclosure, that area, they make it similar to what it would have in nature. I've gone to zoos where they've had one or two snow leopards, and they had the big area where they could climb on the rocks. Well, they could be out all year because they're up in the Himalayas in Tibet. And the lions have an enclosure where in our zoo it's temperature rated. They can be out all winter. They have heat rocks, and the tigers have a big natural habitat with a lot of the grass. They have a pond that they can go in because tigers are good swimmers. It's making these animals comfortable in a natural habitat because some of them cannot be released back. If you have, say, for example, tiger cubs born, you can't release them in the wild because their mother hasn't taught them how to hunt for food. So the tigers are sort of traded off with other zoos, and the population of them are increasing. And it's always my philosophy, they're better in a habitat that's been man-created to be exactly like their natural habitat than to have them in nature where they're endangered. And a lot of people, you know, it's okay, you can disagree with me. For example, our zoo here, we have a female polar bear who is just not, hasn't been accepting the males. Now, they know that the males are fertile because one came from another zoo, an all-natural background. In other words, he was born in the wild in a pure bloodline. And the female is too. But for some reason, she was just not accepting any of these males.
She's picky.
So
she's picky.
Right. Oh yeah, she's a picky bitch. Yeah. Pardon me, take that back.
That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. No, for some reason, she was the only cub her mother had, and the mother came from the Arctic, but she spent just about all of her life in an 8x5 cage in a circus. Whether she was trained to jump through hoops, I don't know. From there, and this was in Mexico, and then she went to Puerto Rico, and then the zoo found out about it, and, you know, there was a lot of protocol and red tape, and we finally got her. And, in fact, this was when she came to us. I think she was about 22 or 24. So that's all those years spent, you know, in a warm climate. When she came up here, she saw snow for the first time.
Wow.
And now it's her cub that they're trying to breed because of her background. Her father was native born in the Arctic, and the mother. So her bloodline is pure. Now what they're going to do is they're going to send her to a zoo in Chicago to be with a different male there, in hopes that, well, maybe it's just the habitat that we've made for her. I mean, she seems happy. She prowls. She goes in the outdoor pool. They have a beautiful pool where people can go and see her swim. You know, it's just magnificent to see them. You know, they don't use their front paws. They use their back legs like a rudder. And to see the kids' eyes when they see her come up to the glass. And you know how big a polar bear is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're gigantic. And so hopefully, you know, they will. And I just wish that they would find company for our one tiger, a female tiger, because she's had a lot of males too. And, you know, she could be barren. Who knows? Her sister has had a lot of litters. But you don't know. Maybe a change in atmosphere.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they got to give her a little alcohol. Let me remind folks.
As long as it's not a rhino horn, because that's supposed to be an aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
In fact, our zoo is the only zoo that has two male white rhinos. Usually two males together, you know, they get to knocking each other around. But our rhino keeper, they're like her babies. I have a picture of her sitting behind a fence, and the two rhinos are on the other side, and she's eating her lunch.
Wow.
I've seen her up on rocks eating a breakfast with them, and they know her. And that's, but they're two males. So whether they, you know, and in the wild, they are endangered. There's been some zoos in Chicago that have successfully bred a Sumatran rhino, an Indian rhino, the black rhino. The western black rhino is just about totally extinct in Africa. So for them to try to breed them over here is a plus for the species. I don't know if they would release them back in the wild, because they're still being poached. And the same thing with elephants, too.
Yeah.
And it really is a shame.
I saw...
And now with the... I'm taking back the ban on ivory. It's not going to do anything.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
You know.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, they won't. But let me remind folks, Diane Brisky is the voice you're hearing, and a voice of reason when it comes to these issues. That's for sure. Frank McKay here with Diane Brisky, the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Let me ask you about artificial insemination in zoo animals. And I know pandas have a heck of a time reproducing in zoos, and when they do, it's a big deal, and you know, like people from all over the world come and they witness what's going on and everything else. But how well does artificial insemination work in these zoo settings?
I don't think that there's very many. They try to do it in a natural way. We have a male lion, and I believe he might have two females with him. Our tigers, the male and the female, oh, we got another picky female. Yeah. She plays the teasing game, laying on her back and, pawing him, and yet 2 minutes later she'll be up on a rock and growling at him like she's going to attack him. It's very hard because, you have to anesthetize both of them in order to get the sperm and the eggs, to put them together. Pandas have between, I believe it's a 24 to 72-hour patch of time where they can be bred in the wild. Yeah. Now, some of them, I believe out in California, have been successful with a male and a female. But I know in China, and this is the one big plus I will give for China, they are very successful in artificially inseminating them, because there are a lot of species that once the female has been inseminated or naturally, they take the male out right away. In some of the reptiles at our aquarium here in Michigan, they have a chameleon, and the females are larger than the males. So when they figure her time is, right, they'll put the male in with her. And she can either accept him or she'll just hiss and they have to get him out. So, but then in a month, they may put him back in and she accepts him. But they still have to take him out right away because she'll kill him.
Yeah.
So
she'll kill him, protecting her egg, basically, right? Protecting
right. And it's just there's a lot of species like that. The black widow spider.
Yeah.
You wonder how you get little spiders when she kills her husband off. But our chameleon has laid eggs. Naturally, they're infertile. The birds will lay eggs. It's a natural instinct, but they're not fertile because they don't have a male. And that's the one thing about the zoos. They do what they can, but I'm not sure a lot of them use the insemination to get their species. They'd like them to do it naturally because that's their natural instinct.
Yeah,
you can go to our zoo, for example. We had one male zebra who was having a great time with his harem because he was the only male, and he had about five females. And you could hear them braying, and you walk by, and he's either running around or he's doing his husbandly duties. And if she doesn't like it, she'll kick him right in the jaw. But we've had a lot of colts born and foals born. So to give them the natural instinct is better than to do it artificially.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, there was a story, and again, let me remind folks, Diane Prisky is the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Here with me, Frank McKay, part of a series with Diane. And we're talking about the environment. We're talking about animals and oceans and a little bit of everything. There was a story about red-tailed hawks. And I don't know if you're aware of it, but they're monogamous. And once they mate, they'll mate for life. And there was a female red-tailed hawk in Tompkins Square Park in New York City. and she broke her wing, and they took her and they got her fixed. She was mated up. She was paired up with a red-tailed hawk male named Christo. And after she left, he just assumed she died or she ran off with the yoga instructor or whatever. And he coupled up with another red-tailed hawk female named Nora. And, you know, everything was, you know, they nested up together and Nora took over the nest of Dora. And everything was fine. 3 months later, they brought Dora back. And boy, did trouble start. And they both turned on Christo and they were really angry with him. I mean, they were, you know, they were like attacking him or whatever. And then they kind of, you know, worked it all out. And Nora went and she started work on a nest on the other side of the park. He was bringing branches over to her, so he's kind of splitting time between the two. But I just thought it was an interesting story. I mean, a fascinating little story there. But they're monogamous. Red-tailed hawks are monogamous. It's not, you know, yeah. Like
there's a lot of species of birds. Eagles are another one. The raptors are swans, geese, ducks,
penguins. I think penguins are
right. Yeah, they you know, stick to as much. If one happens to die, they may hook up with another one. I know on our canal, we always have mallard ducks. And when they get to a certain age, the males get these beautiful green heads. And we'll see a male and a female swimming together. And then down the canal, we'll see four males who apparently couldn't find a female, you know, so they're kind of stuck out there. We've had geese, usually in June, is the time when the geese have their broods. And we've had some that when they swim by, and they're always in a line, mama's in the front, daddy's in the back, and we count them. We've had them up to 14. Now their numbers are going down as for a number of babies, but if they were to lose a mother or a father, might hook up with another one. In June, the Canada geese are they lose their flight feathers, so they're kind of stuck on land until those grow out. So that's when they take care of their brood. And they come up on our beach and sometimes we'll throw corn out for them. But it really is amazing to see the nurturing that they do. You know, mothers and babies will come up and eat the grass. Daddy's standing guard. And it's like, don't come near me. Geese are very protective and they can be very lethal.
Yeah.
Now, at the zoo, when they knew that there was a nest with possible eggs in it, they would put a sign up that says nesting geese, you know, keep a distance, because they'll hiss, and their bite is really bad. And even some of the little doves are another one that are monogamous. And it's really nice to see the family complex that some of these animals show in nature. And when I talk to kids, it's, you know, I try to tell them it's a family. You know, once the little ducks lose their down and they get their flight feathers, then it's time for them to leave the nest. But the mother and the father protect them up to that time. And that's what your parents are doing to you. Mm-hmm. And animals do the same thing. It's really surprising to see how an animal, you take an animal like a crocodile or an alligator, goes up on land, digs a hole, just like the turtles do, lays her eggs, covers them up, and the sun naturally incubates them, but she's right there. Because where they are, they have monitor lizards, which dig them up and eat the eggs. There's other small mammals. But when she hears them in their little...
Yeah.
She can hear them. She'll go and she'll dig them up. And where she finds one out of its egg, she'll take those big mammoth jaws of hers, pick them up, and she's got like a little sack under her throat, puts them in there. And she may take five or six, goes down to the water, opens her mouth, and they come out. Now, as vicious as that carnivore is, she picks these, her little ones up as if they're glass.
Wow.
Now that, you know, nature is really amazing. And I think if more people saw that, that's why I'm all for the Blue Planet series, National Geographic. They don't just show you, this is the jungle, da, 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 but they show you how these animals interact with each other, the family oriented, how an animal teaches their young to hunt. And that I like to correlate it with the kids learning about families, how an animal baby learns from its mother. Yeah. And I've seen that with our chimpanzees when I worked at the zoo.
Oh, listen, just a great job on it, on everything. And we really have to bring more attention to the zoos and what they've been doing out here. Diane Briskey, I want to thank you once again for being here.
Oh, I really appreciate talking, Frank.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful job. The author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction, Diane Briskey, has been our very special guest. We encourage everyone to binge listen to everything we do. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.